Welcome into the Wizards group chat. I'm your host, Ryan Oliver, alongside my man, Chase Carroll. Chase, we got a guest in the building. I'm really excited to have this person on, host of the Wizards podcast, contributor to Bullets Forever, a must follow on Wizards Twitter, keeps me informed. I honestly steal information from his page all the time when I'm looking for up-to-date information and stats. Greg Finberg. Greg, thanks for joining the pod, man. Welcome to the group chat.
Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Chase, again, for having me. Ryan just said a lot of nice things about me, but obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you're like me, and you know that this is the place to be for Wizards news, so I'm just excited to get on here and talk to you guys about the Wiz.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Well, let's just jump right in. The Wizards, they've been playing pretty well of late. I know they've lost, I believe, five out of their last six. They had an impressive win against the Bucks, but I think the general play has been kind of on the upswing compared to what we saw earlier in the season. We've had a couple, like, three-game win streaks sprinkled in over the past, like, 15 games or so. Obviously, like, we know with the roster, we're not going to win a ton of games, but I think there's a lot to be excited about as we're kind of wrapping up the season here. There's only, like, six or seven games left. But let's kind of talk about the recent play that we've seen. Let's start with the Bucks game. I thought that was one of the more impressive wins of the season. I thought we saw a good showing from the young guys. Kuzma was out that game, so we had Kispert, Denny, Vucevic all making big contributions. Let's start with you, Greg. From that game, which was a victory over one of the best teams in the league, what were some of your takeaways? What were you impressed with the team that maybe you feel like can be signs of, like, the foundation that's building going forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned the Bucks game. I mean, the Wiz are 4-6 in their last 10. They have a bunch of impressive wins. 4-6 in your last 10 isn't impressive for most teams in the league, but when you're as bad as the Wizards, you got to take the small victories. And the Bucks was probably the best win of the season. I mean, for starters, I thought Jordan Poole was pretty solid all night. And Jordan Poole's been a guy that has been very polarizing. A lot of people were off the Jordan Poole train in the beginning. I tweeted a bunch of times, like, you're obviously going to be critical of Jordan Poole, and that's okay, but you can't just be there for when Jordan Poole is good. Obviously, I've said some things about Jordan Poole. Everyone has. You're not just going to say Jordan Poole is great when he's going 0 points against the Cavs on 0 of 8 shooting. Like, Jordan Poole has been playing very well, and it's okay to talk about that now. He, at that starting point guard, I think Tyus Jones being out has been tremendous for his development in terms of that primary ball handler, and he showed it against the Bucks. In that win, you also got to talk about a guy like Denny Avdia, who put together another impressive game. And it's not just the scoring with Denny. It's not just the three-point shooting. I think he went 0-for-5 from three in this game, but he still made his mark. He still notched, I think, 8 rebounds to go along with 23 points. Like, this guy is good. You know, helping on the glass when you don't have Holmes and Bagley has been huge. You know, Denny Avdia and Jordan Poole were two of the focal points of that win. And then you got to talk about Tristan Vucevic, second round pick coming over from the Serbian league. He's been arguably the most intriguing big man that we've seen this season since that Gaff trade. I've been very impressed with Holmes and Bagley, but Vucevic is only 21 and he's coming off a 14 point game against the Bucks, and a 15 point game before that. So those three guys are the takeaways. Obviously, Corey Kispert, I know we're going to hit on Corey later in the episode, so I'll save what I want to say about Corey for that, but those three guys are my biggest takeaways from that win.
Chase?
Yeah. For specifically talking about the Bucks game, just seeing the young talent come away and get a win over the second best team. See, to lose some games like this every once in a while, but and of course Dame was out this game, but we had a lot of guys out as well. So seeing a win really led by Jordan Poole, by Corey Kispert, Denny Avdia, Tristan Vucevic, even a guy like Jared Butler, we're starting to learn some things here late in the season with Tyus Jones out. I think both of us here on this podcast have been advocates for Jared Butler, seeing what he could do. We're finally starting to see here towards the end of the season what he can do, and we'll dive a little bit more into him later on, but we're starting to actually see some real minutes from him. So more so than just the win, we're seeing valuable minutes for our young guys leading to a win, which is really what I'm looking for towards the end of the year. I know people don't want to be winning a ton of games here at the end of the year, ruining draft positioning. I think these wins are just as valuable here with the young guys towards the end of the season, especially in a draft class like this coming up where there's not really a surefire number one. I think it's just as valuable to actually get wins building with the young guys in the building as it is, you know, losing a ton of games at the end of the year and heading into the off season, you know, looking really awful. So I think this is just as valuable what we're seeing in a game like this from these young guys.
I think we've seen a lot of important steps forward for mainly Denny and Corey. Like, those are guys that we, it's funny. I was looking at Corey's stats on ESPN and I realized, wow, he's 25. He just turned 25 last month. I thought he was 24, but I was like, wow, like he's already in his mid 20s. But in terms of experience level, he's still, you know, obviously relatively young. And, I know earlier in the year, Chase and I, we both kind of questioned whether Corey would be a part of the long-term vision of the team. And we obviously can go a little deeper into Corey, as Greg mentioned a little bit later in the pod. But I think that we've seen a lot just the past few games from him, to me, that I feel like has been more than we've seen previously. Like, he's just seems really confident in his off the drive game, like, you know, pump faking, getting in the paint, making plays that way. His shot is just seems like, it's still like a line drive, but I feel like he's like, it's going to go in every time he shoots now, especially from distance. I just feel like we're seeing, and obviously Denny, let me touch on Denny too. During the Bucks game, I honestly couldn't tell you offhand without looking at the stats, how many points he had or how many rebounds he had, but I thought that was one of his best play games of his career. Like, he just seemed so in command of the game, the pace of the game, the pace of his own game. Like, he wasn't rushed. He was getting to the spots he wanted to get to. If he wanted to get to the rim, he was doing that. Which side of the rim he wanted to finish on, which is always the right, but he was getting to that spot. I was just really impressed with kind of his feel that you could feel through just watching it on TV. You felt like Denny was in command in that point forward role. And I feel like that's what we all have wanted to see from him since he's really been here. And especially over the past year or two, where you see these point forward skills, but is it something he could do in like against real competition? And the Bucks are real competition. We saw him pretty much in command of that game for a lot of the game. And the stats, even though I think he had 22 points and like 7 rebounds and 4 or 5 assists, and his stats look fine, but I felt like the stats didn't really tell you the whole story. You had to actually watch the game and see how he kind of just had control over the game. Did you guys feel that way? Greg, did you feel that way in terms of like his pace?
Yeah, and it's a good point from you, Ryan. You mentioned only finishing on the right, and I mean that's something that he's got to work on. But when he gets the, I talked about his rebounding already. But as a bigger wing, when he gets the ball, he's not looking for a guard to outlet to or somebody else to pass it. He is that guard in the fast break, and he's 6'8", 200 probably 20 plus pounds. He's a big dude, and he takes it down the floor. And if a guy is, you know, brave enough to get in his way, he just puts his shoulder into him and goes. But if you look back 3 years before in his rookie year, he'd take it into the paint and then he'd fade away when he's taking layups. He'd shy away from the contact. He seeks that contact now. And I think that's a part of what you're trying to say here is that pace when he gets the ball, he's confident enough in his game to where I'm going to grab the rebound. I'm going to sprint down the court. You're not going to stop me. And if you do, I'm going to find the open guy. You've seen him countless times throw it out to Corey or Jordan, making the right play. So I think that confidence that he's been able to develop in terms of when I get the ball and I take it into their chest, like they can't stop that. Once he figured that out, he was able to dictate the pace. And Brian Keefe screaming the entire game, like, let's go, let's go. And Denny's the exact, guy for that. He gets the ball and he takes it up the court. You know, the Wizards are one of the worst half court teams in the league. So getting out in transition and running is something that's huge, and Denny being so good in transition and upping that pace has been really big for not just Denny but for the team too.
Yeah, and Corey has shined with that pace too. Just getting up and down the floor, it sets him up for his best attribute, which is knocking down threes. And I really just think we've seen steps from them that make me feel like, I know early on I felt iffy about whether Corey was a long term piece, and I think I feel much more confident in. I think they should extend him going forward here. We can, you know, maybe discuss what number we think is fair in a little while. But I think that the progression we're seeing with Kuzma missing some games here, with Tyus, and we're seeing what Poole can do. Let's talk a little bit about Poole. I definitely feel like that transition to the point guard position has been one that's been we're reaping the benefits of that. We're seeing a lot of development. I was wrong because I kind of didn't think that the on-ball thing mattered as much. I know there's a lot made about that on Wizards Twitter before we really saw it. Like, oh, you know, I know Dombo was one of these people that really was like, he needs to be on the ball. And I didn't know if I felt like it mattered that much. I thought, you know, hey, like we've seen him play off ball in Golden State, you know, he could do both, but we're really seeing here in the Wizards uniform that him playing point guard and having the ball, he has a lot of natural vision. He puts pressure on the rim. He can bend the defense. Chase, what's been your impression of what we've seen recently, the past few games with Poole at point?
Yeah, hands up. I was one of those guys that was saying I didn't really think it was going to matter, you know, his role with the team here. I definitely thought that what we've seen from Poole, we didn't want to see more of the ball in his hands. I was thinking if he's playing this poorly without the ball in his hands, what's putting the ball in his hands really going to do? It's just going to highlight the fact that he's playing really poorly. And I don't think I could have been more wrong. He's been very solid, at least ever since moving to the bench, the point guard role off the bench. He's been really strong. And now we're seeing him in the starting role. I think we've probably seen enough to say I'm comfortable seeing next season if he can be the starting point guard. Of course, we're still in a rebuild. I think we still want to be pretty bad next year. So what's the point if you're not getting your guy in the draft? I'm not really trying to bring Tyus Jones back. I thank you, Tyus, for everything you've done here. You've done a great job in your role. But to be honest with you, I think he may be holding back what we can see from Jordan Poole now that we've seen him in that starting point role. He's coming off of, I think, one of his better games of the year against the Bucks. His stat line doesn't look insane. 16 points, 13 assists, 6 for 14 shooting. That's an efficient shooting game where he was really orchestrating the offense. 13 assists. I believe that maybe it's definitely his Wizards career high. Maybe his
career high.
Yep, career high. So we're seeing with the ball in his hands more, and he's actually taken that role on and decided I can be a facilitator as well. So for me, if your guy isn't in the draft, if your point guard isn't in this draft, which to me I'm not seeing an elite point guard prospect that's screaming at me, at least maybe there's a point guard prospect that's screaming at our front office, but to me there's not a guy that I'm dead set on needing to get in this draft. So we can see what Jordan Poole can do for hopefully an entire year in this role. We're paying him whether we want to or not. He's gonna be here, so let's put him in the best position to succeed and see if it works for me. That's what I'd like to see next year. I think we may potentially actually have our point guard rotation kind of set. I'm not too worried about finding a new one. If we got Jordan Poole in the building and Jared Butler's been impressing me in his backup role since he's gotten that opportunity. So for me, it's not a dire need to get a new point guard. I think there's big needs that the Wizards need addressing, and point guard will eventually be one once they're actually trying to become a great team. But to me, I think they need to start finding every wing that actually is going to be here long term. And from there, you'll get your point guard in the future to me. So I'd love to see what Jordan can do in this role moving forward.
Greg, you have any thoughts about Poole at point?
Yeah. I mean, Jay said it pretty perfectly, but I'll add if I can. The vision that you're seeing from Jordan Poole is something that I didn't even think. And I watched a lot of Warriors games. Usually when it's like 10 o'clock, there's not much on. So you just go on League Pass, watch the Warriors. And he was solid as that guard off the bench, but wasn't necessarily in that primary point guard role. And I had some concerns. And, you know, when you play off the bench, it's a little different than starting. You're playing against different competition. The game plan's not centered around you. It's centered around the other star players. So those were some concerns I had. And I didn't like him. Wes Unseld Jr. played him like he was Steph Curry. Like, you're going to play point guard, but you're not actually a point guard. Everyone else is making the passes. You're just getting off screens. He's not a catch and shoot guy. He's really good at creating space, and he's really good at finding his teammates. And Wes Unseld Jr. sat there and did everything the wrong way, and that's why he was eventually fired. And now that Jordan Poole's starting at point guard, you're able to see more of his game, and that's why I was reserving, you know, calling him not like a bust, but just calling it a bad trade, because if you ever, like, you got ripped off, bro, Chris Paul was gonna walk for nothing. You got something for Chris Paul. You even got a first-round pick. It's heavily protected, but you even got a first-round pick. So Jordan Poole being anything but, like, absolutely terrible is a bonus, because you would have had nothing. And the money doesn't matter. We have the most cap space in the league, I think. You're not, no one cares that we're paying him $30 million because we're not going to be good for another 3 years. So I don't think that's going to matter. But like Chase said, the point guard rotation, if you do decide to go with Poole and Butler next year, looks pretty solid. As somebody who's been on Jared Butler since the summer league when he cooked us on the Thunder, I'm very happy to see that he's playing very well. And I know we'll touch on that later as well, but yeah, just like Chase said, I'm very confident in what we have right now at point guard.
Well, let's actually just touch on it now. I honestly was a person, I said on a recent pod that I wasn't really impressed with any of the young guys that are like, I'm talking about the young guys, not like Denny or Kispert, but the Johnny Davises, Patrick Baldwin, Jared Butler, et cetera. I wasn't really impressed with any of those guys. I said that a few pods ago. And since I said that, I think Butler has kind of, okay, piqued my interest a little bit with his play. And I honestly think that they may have a good backup point guard, like both of you have mentioned so far. And I know, Greg, I was listening to your last pod, and you were talking about Butler's play, and I agree with you. I feel like that we've seen enough at this point where he should at least get a full regular contract with the team, and I think at the minimum or something, obviously, but and kind of be brought on to be that backup, and why not? I mean, he's looked really good. I feel like his game doesn't have any major flaws. I don't think his upside is huge. Like, I don't think he's going to be anything more than a backup point guard in the NBA. But at the end of the day, you do need a competent backup point guard, and I definitely think that he can be that. I think we've seen good effort on both sides of the ball. We've seen his ability to finish at the rim, and just run the offense. And honestly, I think that just having players like him, where you're kind of finding them like diamonds in the rough types, and maybe they're not going to be superstars, but they are good rotational players. That's what all the good franchises do. So they find these guys that aren't top draft picks, and they kind of, Miami's been doing that for how long? Where I mean, you look at their team, and some of these guys you've never heard of, and they come in and they're playing in the finals. So the Wizards need to be doing that. They need to be finding guys like Jared Butler and Vucevic and these second round picks, undrafted type of guys, and making them contributors. I don't think Patrick Baldwin can play. I want to say that really quick again. I don't think he can play. I was looking forward to him in that deal too, but I haven't seen anything that makes me think that Baldwin is better than a G leaguer. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, Greg, but I digress. I'm not a Baldwin guy at this point, but Butler, I definitely think has a place, at least on next year's team for sure.
I mean, yeah, I definitely, like you said, I've been a big Jared Butler person for a minute now. But honestly, when I look at, there's three things I look for in a backup point guard because the Wizards haven't had a really good backup point guard. Even when we had John, you had like Ramon Sessions and Andre Miller coming off the bench. Like those guys were washed. You didn't have that guy off the bench that you could hang your hat on. So when I look for a backup point guard, I look for a guy that can knock down the occasional three, can set up his teammates, and can play defense. When you're talking about a starting point guard, you want other things like size, really good vision in the front court, speed. Like those are all attributes that top guy has. But you just need three baseline things: defense, 3-point shooting, and ability to find his teammates. And Jared Butler does all three of those things very well, and that's why I think he's had success. He was killing it with the Go-Go. He worked his way up to the NBA, and he's been great. And look, like I said, Tyus Jones being hurt is a blessing in disguise because for how good Tyus Jones has played this season, you're not going to get anything unless you sign and trade him in the offseason. He's going to probably walk for free. Don't waste those reps. You basically wasted 50 games of Jordan Poole that he could have started at point guard and 50 games for Butler that you could have had him backing him up. Don't waste 30 more games. And I'm glad that they, and I mean, they didn't do this on purpose. Tyus just got hurt. But the fact that he's sitting allows both those guys to play extended minutes and for the Wizards to truly evaluate that. And not only has Jordan Poole proven everyone right that he's a point guard, but Jared Butler has earned himself a roster spot for next season.
I completely agree with Greg. Just the fact that he's completely a versatile backup point guard, he does offer a little bit of everything. He is a relatively big guard, so when you put him in there, he's not hurting you on defense. I think that's been a big problem this season. Is another big reason why Jordan Poole has struggled is because he's been alongside a guy like Tyus Jones, who neither of them can really defend on that side of the ball. So you're able to have at least a change of pace on the defensive end there with Jared Butler last game against the Lakers. We actually saw a little bit of how pesky he can be. There were multiple times where he came from behind to get a steal. He had three steals, one block, 29 minutes. So when he actually gets the opportunity, we've seen that he's able to at least produce a little bit on the defensive end, something that we've severely lacked from the guard position, both the one and the two. When Bilal's been in there, it's been good. But besides Bilal, we've really not had too much to hang our hats on defensively from the guard position. So any bit of defense that I'm seeing, I'm all about it. So the fact that Jared Butler's been able to produce defensively, we've seen now two strong games before the Lakers game, Heat game, 14-7 on 5 of 6 shooting, followed it up against the Bucks in a big win, 17 points, 7 of 10 shooting, 3 for 3 from three. That's an impressive game where he was a big part of a win over the Bucks, second best team in the East. So if he can keep doing this the last few games of the season, I'm definitely intrigued about what we can see from him. Hopefully, again, in the summer league, I hope he gets another opportunity this time with us, not killing us in the summer league like he did this year. Killing the other teams for us would be wonderful to see. But just having a young guy, to your point, Ryan, I don't think PBJ is really much of anything to look forward to in the future. I think we both said what we think about Amirui and what we think of his roster spot. I know we'll probably dig into that a little bit more now that we've seen even more time for him recently, but we've seen what I think to be a couple wastes of roster spots here with young guys. Whereas we're seeing Jared Butler, I think we've finally got at least one guy we can say, all right, he's sticking around. He can play some ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that both you guys touched on something I think is really important. One, the comment that Greg made about Tyus being out being a blessing in disguise. I think the same thing with Kuzma being out, missing time too. And you're just kind of forcing guys like Kispert and Denny to do more. And the game last night against the Lakers, I was just some of the plays that Kuzma makes, I almost found myself frustrated having watched the game, the win the night before, watching Kuzma last night against the Lakers. And it wasn't that he did anything out of the ordinary for Kuzma, but sometimes I feel like he wants to be the superstar on the team. So he plays kind of like he's Jason Tatum and he's not Jason Tatum. And I feel like sometimes it's to the detriment of the other guys on the team. And it's not even the commentary of like, I think the team is better without Kuzma. It's not even that. It's just seeing Denny and Corey and the young guys get more opportunity when he's out. And then when he immediately comes back, you kind of see him jump back into the, I'm the focal point of the team. I need to hijack possessions with like long two fadeaways and things like that. And it sometimes just doesn't feel like what I want to watch, especially knowing that the team's going to be bad. I'm like, I'd rather just be bad with Denny playing point forward and me seeing what that is, or with Corey doing more. And when Bilal was healthy, him doing more. Like, if we're going to lose, I want to lose with those things and those guys taking their lumps and learning and us seeing the progression, and not the losses where we know Kuzma's going to take like a step back long three and it's going to miss late in the game. Like, I want to see the young guys have those reps. And we've seen that in when Kuzma's been out. And so I think both of those injuries have been blessings in disguise, even though I kind of think it's some of the late season, like, oh yeah, they're hurt type of injuries, to get the young guys experience slash potentially lose more games. But I do think that we've seen a lot of good things. And the second point I want to make is with, we kind of mentioned Coach Unseld, and I feel like having him coach the team for as long as he did this season was just a waste of time, even though I understand why they had to give him the look that they did, being that they were a new front office and all that. And obviously with his legacy and his family's legacy with the franchise, it kind of had to see it through a little bit, but there was nothing about him and his job that was worthy of continuing being the coach. Like he just, the fact that it took this long into the season for us to get an extended look at Poole running point is kind of a travesty when you think about it, because we know Tyus had to play and they're trying to up his trade value and all that, I'm sure. And, I've been a backer of Tyus on this podcast and understanding what he does bring to the table, but we missed out on a whole season of development for Poole, basically. And it kind of sucks that, seeing what he's doing now, we had guys saying that he didn't even belong in the NBA just 2 months ago. And now I'm not saying he's been a world beater, but now we've seen a guy who it's like, okay, if we're paying him 30 million, okay. Like, it's not the best contract in the world, but if he's playing like this, it's not the worst contract in the world either. It's just another NBA contract. It's not anything crazy. So I really feel like, it sucks that we kind of spent so much time doing the Tyus thing and not seeing Poole in this role, but I am glad that we are getting a glimpse of it now, and I do wonder what the front office is gonna want to do going forward. Are they gonna want to make Poole kind of the guy going forward if there's an opportunity to take a point guard in the draft, like a Nikola Topic or something like that? Do they do that? It'll be interesting to see going forward. But let's talk a little bit about Tristan Vukcevic, guys. We got to touch on him. I know that was a guy that Chase and I were really excited about. Greg, I just want to know what your thoughts have been. What have been your early impressions of Big Vuk?
Before I talk about that, I want to touch kind of on what you just said about the team and all these mistakes that we've seen. Just
Sure.
because what you said is perfect, because that's kind of what happens in rebuilding teams. You're trying to throw as many darts at that board as possible to hopefully hit on that bullseye, to hit on one of these picks, to hit on one of these, like Chase mentioned, diamond in the rough type players with Jared Butler. And they've made a lot of mistakes this season. I mean, you basically paid Wes Unseld Jr. $6 million by picking up his option for next season to not coach your team and to get 40 games out of him this season. You basically have wasted half the season playing Jordan Poole out of position, playing Tyus Jones all these minutes by and then not trading him, and now he's injured towards the end of the season. You're playing guys like Kuz really big minutes, and they're taking away shots from other people. You could have traded him at the deadline. There's a lot of stuff like that. And I feel like it's kind of trial and error. In the first year, you're going to see a lot of that, and you're going to see a lot more mistakes, but that's just kind of what you have to expect when you're rebuilding. Stuff's not going to work. A lot of the time, you're going to be terrible. So I just want to make that point. And then in terms of the Vucevic thing, we touched on a little bit earlier, but the fact that he can come over here after about, I don't know, like a year, basically a year playing in the Serbian League, which is still a pretty good league, but the NBA is levels above the Serbian League. And you're basically stepping into this new realm with the best players in the world, and you look like you belong. In his first two or three games, it was hard to tell because they throw him out there for 3 minutes. I mean, I was going to the gym and I was doing more work there than he was in these NBA games. Like, you have to play him more than 3 minutes, and I think they were like, all right, let's ease him in a little bit. Brian Keefe didn't want to throw him too hard into the fire. But these last couple games, I mean, he played 31 minutes against the Lakers. He played almost 30 minutes against the Bucks. Like, they're giving him some time, and he looks like he belongs. And it's so nice to see a rookie look like that, because Bilal looks like he belongs in the league, but he also looks like he has a long way to go. Johnny Davis looks like he might not even belong in the G League. And for Tristan Vucevic to come over here, and after 7 games, I know by far he belongs in this league. It's nice to win one as a Wizards fan. I can't tell you the last time we had a competent second round pick. Maybe Shelvin Mack in 2012. I think I was like 8 years old. So it's been a minute since we've had a good second round pick. And by no means do I want to say now that this guy is it, and to celebrate him. But he genuinely looks like an NBA player. His free throws are perfect. And I mean, I know that's not a huge thing, but he hasn't missed a free throw. He doesn't touch the rim on the free throws. You got Marvin Bagley and Holmes that aren't great free throw shooters. Gaff was never a good free throw shooter. So being 7 foot and having the shooting touch, not only from the line, but I think he's shooting 37% from deep. He's good. He's not really good. He's not like that yet. But the fact that they 7 games in have the confidence to start him against Anthony Davis, and he holds his own, that's impressive. Defensively, not good. He's got a lot of things to work on. He doesn't move his feet enough on the defensive end for my liking. He's getting called for bait fouls, which is going to come in time. I mean, you got a 12-year veteran in AD going against Vucevic. Like, he's going to destroy him. And that's what happened. He had 19 in the first quarter. But offensively, he's terrific. And I'm just really excited to see him play, hopefully, a lot in these last 5 games.
Yeah, to Greg's point, we haven't had a good second round pick since maybe Shelvin Mack. I would argue that it's probably Satoransky, our last stash, Euro stash was Satoransky. That one actually did pay off. One of the few drafts and stash that has paid off for the Wizards, and it looks like potentially this one may have paid off a little bit. I know we're all mad that we didn't bring Vuk over a little bit earlier. I would have liked to see him playing these minutes all year because, I mean, the center rotation was what it was early on. Gallinari and Muscala, for what reason could we not get him time over here? I don't know, but, I mean, maybe he needed that extra year of development in the EuroLeague. He is a professional. I can confidently say, you know, two real games as a Wizard in. Obviously, he's played more than that, but two real games with heavy minutes here as a Wizard. I can confidently say I think he's going to be an NBA player. He's a professional. He's played professional basketball now, and coming right in, it hasn't been a big transition for him. Like we see with a lot of these Euro guys having already played professional ball, it's not something completely foreign to them coming over here to the NBA and playing against grown men. So I love what I've seen from Vuk. I loved what I saw from him already in the summer league. So I think he's just coming right in fresh off of the Euro league. He hasn't had time off really from basketball. So he's coming right in and he looks like he belongs. So to Greg's point, not having had a second round pick, that's been to me an exciting prospect here in a while. He's only 21 years old and already performing offensively. Of course, he has his downsides that he needs to work on the defensive end, but just having an offensive game already at 21 is something to be excited about. And I think we at least have our backup center next season on lock. Obviously, we have guys under contract still. Holmes and Bagley, I believe, are still under contract next season. So we've already said the point guard rotation might be set. It's looking like the center rotation might already be set as well. So they can really just throw a lot of resources at whatever the best player available is this offseason in the draft. So I'm extremely excited about what we've seen from Vuk, what we've seen from Butler. We're seeing some, of course, it's silly season right now, but we're seeing young guys perform and show that they might belong in the NBA. So Vuk, I can't wait to see what he can do here the last few games of the year.
I think the thing I was really having my eye on with Vooch's first few games was, did he look like he belonged? And Chase, you touched on that. And so did you, Greg, that he just immediately looked like he belonged in the NBA. And I don't want to miss pointing out that his two first real big minute games came against Brook Lopez in a win and Anthony Davis in a loss. Those are two of the best defensive bigs in the league. So he wasn't playing well against, you know, some of these makeshift lineups you see around the league this time of year. He was playing against teams that are playing for something. The Bucks are playing for standings. They're playing to get right here before the playoffs. The Lakers are trying to improve their standings in the West. So this isn't like Vooch was doing this against some backups. He was doing this against good elite NBA talent. So I think that that's definitely worth pointing out. And I was thinking about that today. Was I was like, you know, he was doing this against, you know, some good defenders. So it wasn't like he was playing against a bunch of scrubs. Against the Bucks, he had 14 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 of 11 from the field. Against the Lakers, 15 points. He made 3 threes. I just felt like, one, his shot, I knew he could shoot. But knowing he can shoot and what you see on film and in the summer league, it's a different story when the game actually, you know, you're playing a real NBA game and you have Anthony Davis in your face or Brook Lopez in your face. And he was just shooting the ball with such confidence. And honestly, more important than it going in the hoop, I think it's just the confidence in like, oh, I can shoot this right in Brook Lopez's face and I feel confident it's going to go in. I think after watching Johnny Davis's lack of confidence, that seeing a young guy just play with that confidence like he belongs, that said a lot to me about where his mental is at. And that was important to me, I think, as much as anything too, was, okay, we have a guy that's coming over. He doesn't have the reps with this team in terms of chemistry. He doesn't have any NBA experience in terms of real games. And he's playing against two of the best bigs, like I keep mentioning, in the NBA, especially on the defensive end. And he's playing like he belongs, like he's a vet. And that was important to me. Now, Greg, you mentioned his defense. His defense, we all knew more than likely was not going to be good. So my expectations on that and are pretty low. As long as he's somewhat competent, that was all I really wanted to see. I think he's been like relatively fine. It obviously hasn't been great, but I think that that's going to obviously be a work in progress. And that is his obvious weakness in his game. But man, that offense is beautiful. Like he showed, you know, some good vision too with passing the ball. I'm just really excited. I told Chase when we were doing a pod after the draft that I was low key more excited for Vuk than I was Bilal. And I said it kind of jokingly, but kind of seriously, that I feel like his skill set is just, if it hits, it could be a big hit. Now, I think more than likely he'll probably just end up being a rotational big. But hey, man, if you can get, you know, him and pair him with a guy like Sar or something like that, and their skill sets could, you know, I mean, hey, the sky could be the limit. So I'm really excited about Vuk. Am I too excited? I don't know, but I'm pretty excited.
Ryan, we got a lot of takes wrong. I got a lot of takes wrong already early on into our podcast career. I would say we both talked about Vuk after the NBA draft combine, before the draft happened and before we got him. He was somebody we mentioned beforehand that we were intrigued by. And the fact that we got him, I think we can actually say two games in, we may have gotten a good take out of our podcast.
Yeah, we got a hit.
Yeah. one for 10. We're not shooting great numbers. We're early season pool numbers, but just like pool, we have potential to get much better, Ryan.
You just needed to see one get in. Once you saw one get in, now you're not going to miss.
Yeah. We're hot.
Well, before we, Greg, do you have any more points you want to make about Vuk before we move on?
I mean, you guys hit it on the head. I made my points already. I mean, he, like you said, I don't know if I want to get ahead of myself here, but he looks like he's a really good pick. I think it was 41. He looks great. Not much else to say other than what you guys hit on already.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also like the point you made about his free throws, and that is a big thing. Like, we want a big that can make free throws. I think that and his touch, man, his touch is just impressive. And I, last thing I'm going to say, did he look bigger to you guys in terms of like his stature on the court? Like, I felt like,
yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking, because, you know, you see these guys on film, and we saw him in the summer league, but when I was watching him next to Anthony Davis and next to him, I was like, oh, wow, he looks huge, like, on the court. Mm-hmm. He looks pretty big. I don't know if I was the only one that felt that way, but
might just be the haircut, Ryan. He got his haircut, and he just looks like a grown man all of a sudden.
Yeah. I thought he just looked, his stature, I was like, wow, he actually looks like pretty big standing next to Anthony Davis. And, you know, Anthony Davis is really tall too. So, all right, well, let's switch gears here. Let's talk a little bit about Kispert. We kind of touched on it earlier. I know that we all are kind of feeling Kispert at the moment and kind of his trajectory going forward with the team. Chase and I have talked about on this pod a couple times now about where we're kind of trending with Corey in terms of extending him. Greg, I want to pick your brain a little bit. You obviously are really locked in. You're plugged in. You watch every game. I know you have some insights on Corey Kispert and what you would like to see going forward. Do you feel like Kispert should be a part of the long-term vision for the Wizards going forward? And if so, what do you think is a fair extension, or should they even be trying to extend him?
Yes, I do think he should be a part of the future. However, if a team comes by and gives you a Davis Bertans type package a couple years ago, where Boston was given two unprotected first round picks, and some salary filler, some young talent, like, I don't know if you can turn that down. And it's just like you mentioned with the extension, I'll get to the number I'm at right now in a second. You can't hold on to too many guys during a rebuild. You know, it's very rare that the people that are here in year one are, you know, make it to year four, year five of the rebuild if they weren't drafted by that regime. And these guys, Winger and Dawkins, however much they might like Corey, that's not their guy. So I don't know if he is a lock. I would love him to be here. I enjoy everything about his game. I enjoy watching him. I genuinely enjoy watching Corey Kispert play basketball because he just plays the right way. And I mean, his first 2 years, pretty much, it was okay, catch and shoot, liability on defense, the typical, you know, guy that comes into the league as a shooter and can't do anything other than that. But he had to develop a couple of things. And I mean, this season, he's always been our best cutter. But he's arguably one of the better players in terms of putting the ball on the deck and getting to the rim. Because when he gets to the rim, he shields off the defender and he finishes very well. For somebody that isn't considered a finisher, he's developed that float game, the mid range. He's turning into a three level scorer, and that's not a KD type three level scorer. Let's be real with what I'm saying here. But he can knock down the threes at 38%, which is honestly low for a guy like Corey, but impressive for anybody else. He's really efficient around the rim. I saw a stat, I think, from Kevin Broome, that he's shooting like 77% on contested layups this season. And then he's got that floater and mid-range game down. So his ability to be more than just a shooter has been huge this season. And that's kind of why I'm more inclined to keep him throughout and to extend him in the future. And in terms of the defensive end, he's not an unbelievable defender, but he's not Jordan Poole. He's not, letting guys go right past him. He's holding his own. And I at Media Day, he got asked a question about, I asked him a question about what do you want to improve on this season most? And he was like, I can shoot. Everyone knows that, but I don't want to get taken out at the end of the game for defense and offense. Like, I want to play offense and then play defense as well. I don't want to be that liability. And he hasn't. He plays the end of games. He's not a liability. So look, he needed to put the ball on the deck, and he did that. You needed him to become anything but a defensive liability, and he did that. He's getting better every year, and that's why I would be inclined to give him an extension. I mean, you see with Denny Avdia, 4 years, 55, that is an absolute steal. So giving him a similar contract, it makes sense because I don't think Corey's at Denny's level now. But I think a 4 year, $60 million deal is fair, and $15 million per year for a guy that's a really good shooter, and isn't a defensive liability, seems like the market price. Now, if someone comes in and is like, "I'll give you 18 to 20 mil," you got it, bro. I can't compete with you. I'm not gonna outbid myself. I'll just try to find another shooter. And if that's the case, and Corey asks for 20 million, you got to consider trading him at the deadline next year if you don't consider signing him. You don't want to get into a Tyus Jones situation where he's leaving for free at the end of the year. So I think 4 years, 60 mil, if you work through an extension in the offseason, which I'd prefer, keep him here in DC. I feel like that's a fair price for Corey and his abilities.
Yeah, before the season, Ryan, we had discussed how we thought, or at least I had thought, there was one contract extension to be had between Corey and Denny, and we saw Denny get it. So to me, I personally thought we're probably not going to be getting an extension for Corey. And of course, the season has played out and he's improved on a lot of things. And I think he's shown that he can be a valuable asset to this team. Of course, he's a perfect kind of guy to have when you are a contender and you already have your number one guy, your number two guy, number three guy. I don't think Corey's a number one, a number two, a number three. I think he's one of those guys that is a perfect role player on a championship caliber team. He hits threes, he cuts hard, and he does the little things that you want from him. But of course, he may not fit the timeline of the Wizards. To Greg's point, if there's a deal to be had for Corey, you absolutely do take it. You're not dead set in bringing Corey back if you got an offer on the table, but I do think he can be a valuable asset to this team. He's only 25 years old, so you could, conceive that he could be here, 4 years from now and be an important part of the next good Wizards team. It's definitely not a crazy thought that when he's 29, he's still going to probably be an elite 3-point shooter at that time, maybe even, at the prime of his career, hitting big shots, big threes, for a good Wizards team. So the fact that he's getting more shine here now, he's just turned 25 years old and is getting more of a role here. We saw at the end of last season, he really picked it up at this time of year when he got a bigger role, and now we're seeing it again. So to me, of course, he's probably not a three, your third best player on a good team, but if he's your fourth or fifth best player, absolutely, he's going to be a very valuable asset. So if you can get him at, maybe less, hopefully less than Denny numbers, but if you can get him right there, absolutely, I think you can afford to bring both of these guys back, and money is certainly not going to be an issue. I think they have nothing but cap space to work with. Of course, if they do somehow get off of Kuzma this offseason, there's nothing but money to be had for younger players. So I'm excited to see where they go, because really they could do anything with Corey this offseason, and I would not be very surprised by it.
I think I'm at the point now where I feel like pretty strongly and adamantly that they need to bring him back. And I don't feel like, obviously the price has to be reasonable. I don't mean just, back the Brinks trucks up and pay him some crazy amount of money, but I don't think this front office is going to sign a bad contract. So, especially not on a rookie extension type deal. We saw We've seen the contracts they've given out, like with Kuzma and Denny, and I don't think they're going to do anything that's not going to be viewed as a value contract if they are going to do an extension. So I'm not too worried about them giving Kispert some $20 million per year type of thing. I do think it could be slightly over what Denny's getting, just because I think Denny's agent did him a bit of a disservice having him take that contract in the first place, to be honest. I thought that contract was a steal before Denny took this giant step forward this season. And I'm not even some crazy Denny stan, like, you know, some people. I don't mean crazy in the negative sense of the word, but I just mean like a person that's really enthusiastic about Denny. I mean, I've been more indifferent, and I'm obviously a fan and I want him to be good, but I'm just saying I haven't been somebody that's like, oh, Denny's the next big thing. So I'm happy to have that contract, but I don't think I could see Corey taking that exact contract, to be honest. If I was Corey's agent, I would probably be looking at Duncan Robinson's contract, and that would kind of be the analog I would make and say, hey, you know, I'm kind of a similar caliber player. He's getting paid, I think, around 18, 17, 18 million. I don't know if I'd want to give him 17 or 18 million, but I'm just saying, I think that's where he would be trying to angle to. So who knows? I'm thinking 4 for 60, like you mentioned, Greg, is kind of where I think the sweet spot could be. And I definitely think that would be a good deal. And look, Corey has a skill set that literally fits on any team. So he's not a player where you look at and you're going to be like, oh, well, no, you know, he's only going to be able to be traded to a specific type of team. It's literally every team can use shooting. He's a movement shooter. And we see that he can do something off the bounce a little bit now. Every team in the NBA can use that, especially the good ones. So I feel like as long as he's on a team-friendly deal, he'll be tradable down the road. So even if he's not, like, realistically, he's 25 now. When the team's good again, when he's 28 or 29 potentially, he probably won't be on that team, like, if we're being honest. But I think in terms of the asset management vision for the team, I think he needs to be on the team going forward and on an extension so they can kind of maintain the asset, continue developing him. And you know your team needs shooting. You want to see him continue to develop and see where it goes. But I'm really happy with Corey's development, and I definitely feel like he's a guy that has earned that next contract with the Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Duncan Robinson, and I feel like that's a fair comparison. I think Duncan's on a 4-year, $72 million deal, so 18 a year. And you got, I think, Strus signed 4 years, 80 mil with the Cavs, so that's 20 mil. And those are two decent player comps. I mean, I'd say Strus is a little more of a Kispert-type player, very good three-point shooter, but also a not a bigger dude, but, like, Duncan Robinson's a pretty scrawny, lanky guy. I think Strus and Kispert are pretty similar. But Strus has also been on championship teams, and that's why he got $80 million for 4 years. Corey has been a very good player for the Wizards, but he's only in year three in the league, I don't think he's at that level yet. Maybe on his second deal he'll get something like that, but that's why I think 4 years, 60 is fair. You could go up to 64. I mean, you have unlimited funds. You're not, and like Chase said, I think Kuzma, if not at this deadline, definitely next year, when the money starts to go down and he's making, you know, close to sub $20 million per year, that's fine if you basically give Corey the money you would have paid Kuz and move on. So I think it would be a fair contract, and I would give it to him this offseason. You might as well.
Yeah, Chase, do you have any other, you know, thoughts about the contract type of thing or with Kispert or anything of that nature?
No, I think you guys are pretty spot on, especially Greg there with the Strus comparison. I think that's a pretty good comparison for who he is player wise. And I think money wise, I hope he doesn't get a Strus contract, but it's definitely possible someone could give that to him. Yeah. Hopefully not us, but if he continues playing this way, it's definitely conceivable that he could make that kind of money. Shooting is an absolute premium in the NBA. We've seen how valuable 3-point shooting has become over the last decade or so. So teams are gonna want a player like that. Well, you know, hopefully he won't be as big of a liability defensively. He's been less of a liability, to Greg's point, this season than he was, I think, last year. But I wouldn't say it's by any means. I wouldn't call him a 3-and-D is where I'll put it. So hopefully you can develop a little bit more on that end. But 3-point shooting, it's important in the league, and somebody's going to pay for it.
Yeah, I don't think you want him to get to restricted free agency because, like you said, I just think that there would be some team out there that would hit him with the Max Strus type contract just to get him out of DC. So I don't think I would want that contract for the Wizards. I don't think that I would give him that money for the Wizards. But if the Wizards can find some type of middle ground, maybe they give him, a little over $60 million, but it's descending. So when the Wizards are trending upwards, the contract is less, and maybe it's more, pay him more in the years where you have the cap space, the upcoming couple years. So I think there's a middle ground to be had, just like there was a middle ground to be had with the Denny contract. But I think people's expectation, in my personal opinion, isn't that it should be less than Denny because Denny's a better player. Like, that's not how contracts work in the NBA necessarily. So I don't think that we should look at that. And if Kispert comes in over what Denny made, that people should feel a certain way about it, because I think that's just kind of the way things work. Denny maybe wanted to just lock in the money, and that was the best offer the Wizards had presented at the time, and he hadn't done that much in the NBA, so that was a lot of money to him in the time, and felt like he wanted to not take that risk. But if I'm Corey, the thing about Corey that's different than Denny is Corey has a skill set to hang his hat on even before this past season, or this current season, excuse me. Like, he can shoot. We all know he can shoot. So coming into the league, defenses respected him as a shooter. But Denny didn't really have that skill set. You could say, well, I know every night I'm getting this, besides defense. Like, and, defense doesn't always get you paid in the NBA, if we're being honest. So I think there's a little bit of a difference there. But it'll be interesting. But I do think that Corey should be a part of the Wizards going forward. And I'm excited for his development. I think that early on in the season, Chase and I both kind of shared a little bit of disappointment, and I didn't feel like he improved that much, but I feel like with the second half of the season, we've seen some big strides from Corey. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, you make a good point. If Corey makes more money than Denny, doesn't mean that he's better. The NBA is making a lot of money now. The salary cap goes up every single year. So the contracts really can't be compared year to year like they used to be compared. I mean, like $15 million 5 years ago is probably $25 million per year now. So it is a little different. And it also depends what the market is for Corey. If you got a team that's going to give him a lot more money that can, afford it, a team like the Rockets that is on the up and up, and they kind of have some guys on rookie deals, other teams that have a lot of cap space. It sucks that you draft a guy like Corey just to develop him and let him go to a contender, but you have a lot of picks. You can try to find another shooter like Corey with all the draft picks you have. So it wouldn't be the end of the world, but if you could get an extension done now, I'd prefer to do that. So
yeah, I agree with you. The Wizards have some big decisions to make this offseason. This is a big offseason with Winger and Dawkins and kind of their first full go at it, and with the draft and getting them to see, obviously they did the draft last season, but they're not new anymore. So this is their first, like, after evaluating the team and everything and kind of having the full offseason to do what they want to do. Speaking of, big decisions, I think that the Kuzma kind of conundrum and whether he's going to be on the team for the foreseeable future or not may come to a head this offseason. I wanted to ask you guys what you guys thought about that. I know a lot of people are kind of off the Kuzma bandwagon in terms of wanting him on this Wizards team going forward. This kind of happens towards the end of the season sometimes when the star of the team sits out and the young players maybe play a little bit better and a little bit freer without him. I know I just made the comment earlier in the pod that I liked what I saw from the young guys without Kuzma out there. Greg, I'll start with you. What do you think of Kuzma being on the team next year? And do you feel like this offseason is the right time to potentially move him?
I'll start with this. I don't think Kuzma is here beyond 2025. The descending contract makes it really tough for not only the Wizards to hang on to him, but other teams are going to want him. I mean, he's a really good player. He's not a first option. I don't think he's a second option. He's a really good three or four, as you saw in the Lakers. But look, when you take him out and he doesn't play, that's almost 19 shots every game that you're redistributing to other people. And it's mainly going to Denny and Corey and Jordan Poole, and you're seeing them go ahead and do great things with the more touches they're getting. But it also goes to guys like Butler and Vucevic and and it spreads the wealth. I mean, me personally, I don't. I like him as a player, and this sucks to say, I don't think Kyle Kuzma is a winning player as the number one or number two option. I don't think he particularly cares about defense. I don't think he particularly cares about the quality of his shots. I think he thinks he's the number one option, and that's fine to have that confidence, but he's not. And the more you aren't self-aware about where you are as a player, the more you start hurting your team. You see it late in the games. He thinks that he's Kobe. Give me the ball on the block, clear out, and I'm going to take a fadeaway three for the win. Move the ball. Like, you're not like that. He tries to do too much. And I feel like if he just played in his role like Poole has done and like Danny and Corey has done, and he buys into that role, the team could be way better than it is. But as it stands right now, I don't see him being here. I mean, you saw Winger and Dawkins were going to trade him to the Mavericks, but they said, look, we want to run this thing a certain way. We want the players to know if they want to get traded or not. And it's clear. I don't think the move of Kuz wanting to stay in DC is, I really want to be here. I think the Mavericks just didn't make a lot of sense as a 1 year rental. So I think at this trade deadline, if he's not gone, it'll definitely be in the following offseason. But I mean, look, he's almost 29. He doesn't fit into the cards. He'll be like 32 or 33 when the Wizards start contending. It's way different from Poole, who's only 24, and he'll be maybe 27 during the prime years of the Wiz. But again, I don't, as that number one or number two option, I don't think he's a winning player. I don't think he plays the game the right way. I think he forces things. He turns the ball over too much. He tries to be something he's not, and that's why I don't see him being here in the future, because he doesn't affect winning as it stands.
Yeah, I actually completely agree with Greg there. The big thing that we had problems with in the Tommy Shepherd era was that he was reactive and not proactive in his assets. And what I mean by that is we saw, for example, Kuzma at the deadline last year. I think we probably could have gotten valuable assets for Kuzma at that last deadline. And of course, he's still here. And I think I'm more than happy still having him here. It's not a problem that he's here, but the fact that we probably could have gotten multiple, I think probably two first last trade deadline and kept him on the roster for a shot at a play-in. That was a big thing that was an issue in the last regime was seeing guys just we hold on to him too long. Kuzma, Bertans, we ended up of course getting Porzingis for Bertans, but we had multiple firsts on the table for Bertans. So the fact that we've seen this multiple times now, I think being reactive instead of proactive. This is the kind of thing I want to see our front office change around here. And of course, we're all happy Kuzma wants to be here. I love Kyle Kuzma, the player. I like him, the person. I don't think it's like a dire need to get him out the building or anything. But if you can get multiple firsts this offseason for Kyle Kuzma and make the most of your asset, we paid him this offseason, I think, with the full intention of probably getting something in return for him when he's at his most valuable, which you would think would either be this offseason or next trade deadline at least. So I think it just makes sense to strike while the iron's hot. And I think that's going to be either this offseason or next trade deadline. So if it makes sense to trade him, I think they should. We're seeing to your guys' points that Denny has played so much better when Kyle Kuzma has been out. We've seen more opportunity for Corey when he's been out, and of course, a whole lot more touches for Jordan Poole when Kuzma's out. And that's not to say Kyle Kuzma is ball hogging or anything when he gets in there. He's not a bad teammate. I think he's been extremely vital actually in the development of Denny. Like a lot of people that are the I'd say the Denny stans that want Kyle Kuzma shipped out the door and that he's been bad for Denny. I'd argue that that's not the case. I'd say he's been more instrumental in developing Denny than maybe anybody else on the roster. Maybe a guy like Anthony Gill's helped as well. That's must be a reason why he's around. But Kyle Kuzma, he's been very instrumental in the development of Denny, and I thank him for his contributions, but I do think it's probably the right time to get rid of him.
Yeah, I think I've arrived at the point where I feel like this offseason is just the right time. I know on a previous pod I mentioned that I felt like the sweet spot was either this offseason or the next trade deadline. And I still feel like it could be either or, but it definitely can't be past the next trade deadline because I think his val that this range of time is his peak value, with the contract he has and his age and all of that obvious stuff. I just feel like after getting more information, the season's obviously coming to a close, and with the progression that we've seen from Denny and Corey, I feel like it's time to kind of transition to letting Denny fully have the keys as like the young vet on the team. Like Kuzma's currently the young-ish vet on the team. Obviously, he's in his late 20s now, so he's not super young. But I feel like now Kuzma's kind of served his purpose. We retained the asset. He's been a nice leader for the team. He's probably the most recognizable player, in terms of national, from a national perspective. He's a champion. I think he's had a good influence on the young guys. He's very likable. He's done his part. And like Chase mentioned, like I really appreciate that. And I think that he's not a guy I would be mad keeping around. But I just think from what we've seen, I think that Kuzma would be better off at this point in his career on a different team where he can fit into his more natural role, which is as a third guy or the fourth guy. He's playing a bit above his head, and it honestly just kind of makes him look worse than he is. And Greg, you mentioned how he'll kind of play hero ball late in games and kind of go ISO and things like that in those situations. And it's just, and we talked about this a lot on this podcast about the players on the team are just playing above what their real roles would be on teams that are actually competitive. Like, Gafford having to plug all these holes on defense, which magnified his flaws, which is like he's not a phenomenal defender, but he can be a good defender in the right context. And it just wasn't going to happen here in DC. And we're seeing him be really good for the Mavs because he's kind of playing in the proper context for his skill set. And I think the same could be for Kuzma. If he's on the Kings and he's the third guy behind Fox and Sabonis, I think that would work for him. He would be asked to do less because they already have two guys that can step up in the clutch and do different things with the ball. So I think for Kuzma's sake, it's the right thing. I think for the Wizards that it's time for it's Kispert's 25 now. Like it's not he's not 21 or 19, a kid. Kis or excuse me, Denny's gonna be I think he's 24. So or at least about to be 24 in the upcoming season at least. If he's not already 24, it's like these guys are ready for more. And I think we're seeing like the Bucks game, Denny can do more against good competition. Like it's time for us just to complete. Let's see it. Let's see Denny do more. Let's see Poole do more. He's going to be here for 3 years on a pretty big contract. Let's let these guys do more. Kuzma, we know what it is. It's nothing against him. He's done a great job. I just think it's time for us to move on, cash in the asset, get the picks, whatever it is that they're going to get. The draft could be a perfect time to do it. Maybe there's a team with a higher pick that's a competitive team that thinks, it's not a super strong draft. Maybe we can get another top 10 pick or something in a deal for Kuzma or something like that. Like, I think I would rather them try to cash in the chip this offseason and go into next season. Maybe they can get a couple other vets, in free agency or something like that to kind of have that infrastructure of leadership that Kuzma provides. But let's cash in the Kuzma asset. I just think it's time.
Yeah, I mean, like, it sucks because he's been here for a minute, and he's a fan favorite. Like you said, he's probably apart from Poole, maybe the most well known slash well liked in terms of the national spotlight. But I mean, for the last 10 or so games, every time I post something about the Wiz, I do takeaways for every game, which is about 4 to 5 bullet points, kind of summarizing some of the highlights. And I mean, every comment is just get Kuz off the team. Kuzma's a liability. Like we don't want him here. I mean, the pool stands, the pool accounts. They obviously don't like him. But it's weird because there's a lot of Wizards fans that really like Kuzma and what he brings to the team. And there's a lot of Wizards fans that are kind of done with the late game hero ball and the turnovers and the sloppy play and the lack of defense. And I understand that, but I feel like it's a little unfair as well to a certain degree. Like, look, the Wizards are terrible. They're 2-5 without Kuz, and the two wins that they got are in the last week. So I think Wizards fans are seeing that the team picked up decent wins against Miami and Chicago without Kuz in the last week, and it's a little bit of recency bias in terms of it's all his fault. Like, I think this team's pretty bad with or without Kuz. I don't think Kyle Kuzma is the reason this team's winning or losing games. And that could be said in terms of a good thing because, you know, Kyle Kuzma is not the reason that they're losing, but he's also not helping them win any games. So I think the hate level right now is an all-time high from Wizards fans, or the disapproval rating of Kuzma. I think it's unfair how high it is, but I don't think it's unfair to be there in the first place. I think he hasn't played well enough this season to, you know, maintain that thought from Wizards fans that this guy can be here moving forward, especially as a number one option.
Yeah, I want to touch on the hate thing real quick. I don't want to come across, and I know you're not saying this about me, so you're talking about the people on Twitter, but I don't want it to come across like I'm one of these people, like the team is way better without him. It's not about the team being – the team sucks with him. It's going to suck without him. It's not about that. It's just about I want us to – like Chase mentioned, being proactive and not reactive. I don't want us to wait and not cash in when we can get – a nice little bag for Kuzma. So that's my number one priority. It's asset management. It's not about it. You know, the hero ball stuff does annoy me. You know, I have eyes that sucks to watch that stuff every time. So I don't like that, but that the team is probably going to lose the game, whether it's, you know, Kuzma taking the shot or it's someone else taking the shot. So it's not about that. It's just about, I want them to cash in where they can and get the maximum return. And I also want Denny and Kispert and these young guys to have the room to take more responsibility. And I think that's just, it's just like any team. You know, you watch when the Celtics don't have Tatum playing, Sam Hauser gets more opportunity. It's not that they're better with Sam Hauser in Tatum's spot. It's just natural the way things work. And so I think if you just take Kuzma off the floor, Denny has to do more by nature and by product of the situation. So it's not like Kuzma's holding them back. It's just he's on the team. And I think if he wasn't on the team, there would just be a little bit more space for us to get a full look at the picture. And that's what I want.
I think Tatum's blocking Hauser. I think that's the take Ryan just came away with.
That's the take, right? That's what someone's going to come away with.
And we see this from Wizards Twitter. This goes back to John Wall. They used to say John Wall was blocking Thomas Satoransky when John Wall was out and Sato had the team playing pretty well. And then Beal, of course, was the number one when he was out. Look, we're much better when Beal's out. And that clearly was just never the case. We're going to be seeing it again with Kuzma. It's not Kuzma's fault we're awful, but of course he's not going to be the one to elevate us either. So that's just unfortunately what it's going to be for Kuzma on Twitter. So I hope he doesn't read Greg's comments too often, because yes, it is. I've seen it gets a little rough in there. So, but you know, Kuzma is what Kuzma is, and he's going to be way more valuable to another team. To both of your points, I think he makes way more sense as a championship level number three. We've already seen it in his career with the Lakers, and I just think that makes most sense for him when towards his, you know, late 20s here, entering his early 30s. So I do think it's the right time to move him, but it's definitely not because he's blocking anybody else. I don't think that's the reason why he needs to be shipped out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with what you said. Like, it's not him. He's not the reason the team is 15-62, but he's also not a reason that they aren't. He's not elevating the team, and that's kind of what we're trying to say. He's not. You know, I don't want to say he's not a winning player, but like, he's not bringing in a ton of victories the last couple of years. The Wiz, but it's also not all his fault. It's hard to kind of emphasize that, but I think we've done a decent job of trying to articulate what we're trying to say.
Yeah, well, we'll just have to see where the Kuzma thing goes from here. It'll be interesting to see. There's a lot of big decisions that have to happen this offseason. Another big decision that has to happen this offseason is whether or not Brian Keefe gets to retain the head coaching position. As we know, he's the interim tag. He got that interim tag midseason when Coach Unseld was let go. I thought he's done a pretty good job. We've talked about that here on this podcast, but Greg, we haven't talked about it with you. So I want to know what you feel about the job that Coach Keefe has done. And do you think that he should get consideration for the head coach job going forward?
It's tough to assess a situation like Brian Keefe is in, because he's a first year head coach. He's a 16-year assistant at various levels. He's 100% qualified for the job, but the results aren't there, and it's not his fault that they're not there. This roster is arguably the worst in the league, if not, definitely a top three worst roster. So it's tough to evaluate in terms of wins and losses. I mean, the guy lost. Anytime a coach loses 16 straight games, you're like, why would you bring him back next year? But I don't think you could throw, Doc Rivers or any of these other coaches that other teams signed this season, put them in here, and they wouldn't lose, double digit games in a row. This team is terrible. This roster is bad by design. And Brian Keefe has done all he can with it. And he's picked up some impressive wins. I mean, they beat Miami on the road. They just beat Milwaukee. They beat Sacramento at home. They went to Chicago and beat the Bulls. They've had some, pretty impressive wins, but they've also lost twice to the Pistons. They've had some bad losses too. And so to evaluate Brian Keefe, it's unfair, and the situation's unfair in general. I feel like if I was an assistant and they asked me to be the interim here, I don't know if I would accept that. Do I really want my entire 16-year buildup to being a head coach to culminate with a 50 games of the worst team in the league, pretty much? And then I probably won't be back next year, and I don't know if I'll be back as an assistant. So it's tough to evaluate him. I think the defense has been very good under him. I shouldn't say very good. It's been better. Wasanso Jr.'s defense was just the worst in the league, non-existent. And you've seen the player development. I mean, guys like Jared Butler, even Vucevic coming in here and playing well, that's been a positive that we didn't really see under Wes. The rotations aren't that bad. Would have liked to see, Vucevic play a lot more in the beginning. Would have liked to see Tyus Jones play less towards the end of the season. But I don't know how much of that is the front office telling Brian Keefe to play Tyus Jones to build his value up and stuff like that. So look, it's hard to evaluate him. In terms of me personally, I would prefer to get my guy in the offseason and have him build camaraderie and build that culture for 3 years before we start contending. I don't like the idea of a Steven Silas tank commander coming in here for 3 years, sucking 3 years in a row, and then he's fired when the team's about to be good. I'd rather get my guy, whether it's Charles Lee, who I think is an assistant for the Suns now, Jordy Fernandez, assistant for the Kings, very talented assistant coach. There's a lot of guys that I like, and I like them better than Brian Keefe.
Yeah, and I think we determined here in the offseason, at least Ryan and I, we determined that we were going to be grading Wes Unseld Jr. on a few different things. We're going to be grading him on his development of the young guys. We weren't going to be grading him on wins and losses, because I think we all knew this was going to be a rough year no matter who's coaching this team. So we weren't going to be grading him on wins and losses. We were going to be grading him on how he was developing young guys. Was he, blowing a ton of leads? Was he, coaching to win? Because obviously we're not going to be winning, but was he coaching as if he was trying to win games? So I'm going to grade Brian Keefe off those same things. We've seen development out of Denny. I think we're seeing Denny's best basketball of his career under Brian Keefe. How much of that is, because of Brian Keefe? I don't know. Could simply be he's now in year, what, four of his career, and this is typically when you start taking off. But I don't think we were seeing that under Wes Unseld Jr. early on in the year. So I'd give him a check mark there at least. We saw him when Bilal was healthy. He was trying to prioritize at least his minutes, not necessarily enroll at least offensively, but he moved him into the starting lineup. That's something that I think a lot of us in Wizards Twitter were begging for a while, and he did that. So that's two check marks there on the young development side. And he was willing to move Jordan Poole to the bench to kickstart him a little bit. I think a lot of us wanted that earlier on, and we knew something needed to change for Jordan Poole, whether it be, obviously it ended up being getting him more on ball touches, and that's something we saw from Keith. So all that goes to say, it hasn't obviously been perfect. He's had a lot of bad losses, and how much of this can we blame on Keith for the Wizards being this bad? I don't know. So if, to Greg's point, if there's a better guy out there that the front office sees and says that's our guy, then take him. Don't let Brian Keefe be the reason you don't get your, future head coach on your next good Wizards team. Because if it's not Brian Keefe, then it's not Brian Keefe. But I'll say it's been an unfair situation for him to jump into. And I think he's done as well as one could in this situation. So if he's back next year, I'm not mad at it. I think he's shown enough to be somewhat intrigued, at least, to, you know, in the future. But if there's a guy there that's your guy, go get him. You know, thank you, Keith. You've done a good job here at the end of the season. I think much better than Wes Unseld Jr. did to start the year. I'll say that he's better than that absolute bottom of the barrel. That's where I'll give Brian Keith.
Yeah, well, that's the most important thing, is that he's significantly better than Coach Unseld, which is a low bar. And I hate to pile on somebody, but he just, it just wasn't good. And Keith has done a good job of correcting a lot of the things that were kind of the low hanging fruit that Coach Unseld just didn't seem to be able to do. But I think the point you both made about the young players excelling under Keith is something that's really stood out to me, is I think that Denny's played his best since the coaching has changed. Kisper has taken steps since the coaching has changed. Obviously Bilal was playing more under Keith. I think, as Greg mentioned, it is hard to kind of assess things when you have a guy inheriting a team that is so bad, because the team by design isn't designed to win. So you're not, I mean, how good is your late game execution going to be when the two people executing it are Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma? I mean, I just don't know how much you realistically can expect. And that's why I don't really get too high or low. I mean, I think it was clear that Wes Unseld just wasn't a good coach, no matter what the talent was, because we've seen it with when he had good talent with the Porzingis and Beal and Kuzma team. I mean, that was I wouldn't say good, but, you know, they had a couple higher level players, I'll say, than what we currently have. And I think that it is hard to make that assessment. But I think we've seen enough from Keith where if they wanted to make him the guy going forward, I would be okay with that. And I wouldn't say I would be happy with it, but I think that I would be you wouldn't get any complaints from me. I think that he's done a pretty good job. I don't think it's been great, but I think it's been pretty good considering the circumstance. And I think that there is potential there. It would, you know, if he can get a full offseason and, you know, fully implement his vision for the roster and all of those things, I think we might even see a better version of Keith. Part of me does think, though, that this front office did bring in Keith this offseason to join the coaching staff. And, you know, they gave Wes Unseld an evaluation period, it seemed like, and they determined pretty quickly he wasn't the guy, even though I suspect they already knew that. So part of me does think that Keith might already be their guy. So they, you know, we were thinking about it like, oh, you know, if they can get their guy, part of me thinks that Keith is the guy that they kind of targeted as the guy to be like the Mark Dagnall type, where not everyone, you know, knows about him and all that, and he can kind of build with the team. And as they become good, hopefully he can, you know, continue to grow into the job. With all that said, I'm with you guys that I do want to see them do a full coaching search and kind of interview some of these other guys around the league, young coaches, even former coaches. I know Chase and I have mentioned Kenny Atkinson a few times on this podcast. He's a guy I definitely would want to get an interview. And so I think they should kind of do both. I think Keith has done a good enough job and he deserves consideration for the job, but I don't think he's done a good enough job where you wouldn't do a full search and kind of evaluate a bunch of different candidates and kind of see who you think would be best for the job. But I've been pleased with his work with the team. I think that there really isn't much to nitpick where you would say, oh man, he just hasn't done this or he hasn't done that. I would like to see less. I mean, I know there's been injuries. I mean, and he's played pretty well, but I don't want to see any more Anthony Gill. I don't know if that's a coaching decision or like a front office mandate that he has to play. He's done pretty well, so I don't. And I, you know, I bash him quite a lot on this podcast when he does come up. It's just I don't really see the benefit of him playing as many minutes as I feel like he's been on the court lately. And things like that. Like, I want to see Vuk play more. I mean, he's played more the past couple games, but I don't want to see Gil on the floor over him in crunch time. Like, just let him get the reps. Why not? Like, we might as well just see it. Let him do his thing. But other than that, I don't have any major gripes with Keith. I think he's done a pretty good job, and I wouldn't mind seeing him keep the job going forward if that's what the front office decides.
Yeah, to your point, Ryan, he has played Anthony Gil in the last few games before the injuries to Bagley and to Holmes. We weren't seeing many Vuk minutes, and we were seeing Gil minutes. So to your point, I brought up the check marks in the young player development area. I guess that there is one X mark that we've seen, and he's kind of been forced to play Vuk here at the end of the season rather than, I think, wanting to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and Anthony Gill hasn't been terrible. I mean, I don't think he's been a liability. I think he's been okay. But we don't need to see Anthony Gill. We don't need Anthony Gill to be playing big minutes. He won't be here for that long. You know, just play Vucevic. It's not that difficult. I don't know if that's from the top down. Like, yo, let's not play Anthony Gill 28 minutes. Let's play our second round pick, who's 21. Let's play him those minutes and go from there. So I don't know who told him, but he got it right finally.
Do you guys want to see any more Amari minutes, or where are we at with that roster spot?
I mean, he's under contract, of course, but I just have thought since we've had him, whether it be on a two-way, I thought it was a waste of a two-way position. He's not necessarily young, and he doesn't really bring something to the table that you're like, okay, he brings this. Like, obviously, he brings energy. That would be his calling card. But in the NBA, you kind of need more than just energy to you know, be worth a roster spot in my eyes. He's what? He's not in his early 20s. So mid-20s, mid-late 20s. He's not a young man. So it's not like you're really going to be developing a guy like this. So to me, yeah, you obviously love the energy he brings. Maybe if he becomes the Anthony Gill of your roster, then that's one thing. But you have an Anthony Gill on your roster. So I love the energy. I love that he's probably a really great teammate. But to me, you need a little bit more than that to warrant a roster spot here on a, you know, year one of a rebuild. Year two, especially, I believe he's under contract next year, unless I'm mistaken. But to me, that's just not something I wanted to see. Thanks for the contributions, Amarui. You're obviously a pretty good G League player whenever you get the opportunity, but the big leagues, I just don't think he's cut out for it, and not everybody is. Like, love having your energy as the 15th man on the bench, but I think it's that roster spot's better utilized for a guy like a Jared Butler. Like, these are the kind of guys that we want to take swings at and see who hits. Amarui just doesn't have that upside for me.
It's funny, Chase, that you say he's Anthony Gill, because before, when I was preparing and Ryan sent me the notes under this, I literally wrote Amarui equals Gill, because I think they're also the exact same player. Like, great teammates, I'm sure, always bring the energy, are going to produce in some capacity, but also make some bad plays, don't necessarily belong on the court. Like, if the Wizards were in year three or four of this rebuild, like you said, I'd be pretty upset that we're using a roster spot for Eugene Omarui. But the fact that they're in year one and two and going into year two, I can live with it a little bit more that he's the 15th guy. Do I think there's better players out there? Yes, 100%. But look, he'll be here maybe like next year, and I don't see him being here in the future. But I like literally wrote it down. I 100% agree with your take that he's Anthony Gill.
Yeah, that's funny. I don't have a strong opinion on this. I do think that Amari was better earlier in the year when he got minutes. I felt like he at least kind of had a semblance of an NBA game that you could see. And I mentioned on this podcast when we signed him that the only real NBA skill he had was the energy thing. Like, he can bring that spark off the bench because he'll play harder than everyone else, and that can matter in a short burst. But the problem is when he's playing 15, 20 minutes a night, it's not a short burst of energy. It's an extended period of time, and now his flaws get magnified that he can't shoot, he can't dribble, he can't play defense. Like, so then you're kind of like, what are you left with when he can't do any of those base things other than the energy? So I feel like he's a guy that if you need like a quick 5 minutes of energy, he's got you on that. But if you're playing him any longer than 5 to 10 minutes a game, you're overstretching him for what he brings to the team. And I think what he does bring is he's the kind of guy in practice that is like busting everyone's ass in practice because he's going hard in practice. And so all the good players like respect him. Like, oh, okay, like Eugene, he tries hard, he plays hard. Like, we're rooting for him, but like, he only should play when it's garbage time. like the Giannis Antetokounmpo, like that those vibes. Like, okay, he brings a lot of energy. We all like him, but he only should play when we're either down 30 or up 30, and that's about it. So I don't feel that strongly about it. Like you guys both mentioned that if we were further along in the rebuild, I think I wouldn't want him on the team at all. But given where we are, it just is what it is. I don't really feel that strongly about it either way. But I mean, if they can find a young player to that has more upside to take that spot, then obviously I would be for that. But anyway, I digress. Hopefully Amari, plays a little bit better here down the stretch when he does get minutes, because it's been a bit of a tough watch over the past like 15 to 20 games with him. Okay, we've gone a long time on this podcast. Greg, I gotta get some quick draft thoughts. Obviously that's kind of our Super Bowl here is the draft here, trying to get obviously we're gonna have a top five pick, it looks like, at a minimum, probably. And hopefully a higher pick than that, given we're gonna be the second, or I believe the second worst team, because Detroit is just losing every game here down the stretch. So I guess we're not locked into that top five pick, but it looks like we'll probably have a top five pick. Is there a player that you like, or a position that you think the Wizards should target in the draft? I'll kind of just give you the floor. What are your quick early preliminary draft thoughts?
Yeah, so the Wizards, I mean, right now, Detroit's at 13 wins. The Wizards are at 15, and then San Antonio and Charlotte are tied at 18. Each team's got about 5 or 6 games left. The Wizards are, I would give about like a 90% chance going to be locked into the second worst record, which means that they can't fall anywhere lower than 6. And that would be, I think, since 2013 when they took Otto third overall, that would be the highest that they've drafted since then. So they should have a top 6 pick, 14% chance at one. They're gonna have a good pick. And this has been considered one of the worst draft classes of all time. Unfortunate, obviously, the one time the Wizards decided to tank. It's a terrible draft. But I like that you mentioned, the question was, is there a specific position? And I've seen a lot of people say, no, we don't want Rob Dillingham. We don't want Reed Sheppard. We have Jordan Poole at point guard, and Jared Butler is a backup point guard, and we have Corey Kispert. We're fine at the guard position. Yeah, I agree with that. I think we have a lot of really good guards, but apart from Bilal, I don't think anybody's a lock to be here in the next 3 years. I think Bilal will be here for the long haul, and I don't think anybody else can lock you can lock in. So I think you have to go best player available, best talent available. If that's a point guard, if you get the fourth pick. And he's the best player to take him. I don't care if you have a log jam, figure it out. The Cavs had the fourth pick or the fifth pick a couple years ago. They had Colin Sexton at point guard. Darius Garland was by far the best player available. They took him. It was a little weird early on, but Garland emerged as the much better player, and they were able to move Sexton and get Donovan Mitchell. Like, you can't sit here and be plugging holes on the team when you are 15 and 62. You got a lot more than just a couple holes on this team. You got a lot of players that aren't good enough. So yes, you need a center more than anything. And Sar is the best player in this draft class by far. So that's if you get the first pick, you have to go with him. And my big board, I have Donovan Klingon as the second best player. And I know that's weird for a lot of people. Some people have him in the late lottery. Some people have him in the 9-10 range. It's hard to find a big that mobile. With that size, his passing ability, his touch around the rim. So it helps the Wizards that I think the two best players are at the position they need most, which is center. But I'm not of the inclination that if a point guard or a shooting guard is the best player available at three, that I won't take him because we have Jordan Poole and Jared Butler and Corey Kispert. I'm going to go best player available when I'm rebuilding. That's just my kind of thoughts.
So you mentioned so Sar is your favorite prospect. So is that the guy that you would target? Say the Wizards picked two, like, because that's where they're and he's available at two. Is that the guy kind of in your mind at this moment? I'm not gonna hold you to it, but in this moment that
Yes.
you like.
Yeah, 100%. And it gets weird with the other because like the Spurs have Wemby and they have Sochan. They have Keldon Johnson. They got a lot of front court players. And Sar is listed as a power forward, but he's 7 foot. So he could play center if he really needs to. It's more like an Anthony Davis. He's 7 foot. And he's a great shot blocker, but he's better at power forward. That's kind of Sar. And I think a team like Detroit, they have Jalen Duren. The Spurs have Wemby. I'm not really concerned about the centers going amongst the top teams. So I think one of Sarr Klingon will be there. I think Sarr is the clear-cut best player, and then it's a steep drop from there. But if I have one and he's there, I'm taking him. If I have two, I'm taking him. But I would have Sarr, and then you have a bunch of the guys like Nikola Topic, Zachariah Richache, foreign guys that you don't have too much of a gauge on because they're not playing in college and you don't get to watch them as much. But they're solid as well. So the Wizards picking top six, there's six guys in this draft definitely that I wouldn't be mad at having. So you can lose definitely. You can have the second worst record and get the sixth pick because that's just the luck the Wizards have. But if I have one, I'm going Sar.
Chase,
And
you have
I
any
don't think
thoughts?
there's, yeah, I just don't think there's to both of your points, there's not really a consensus top five at this point. There's not even a really consensus number one. Of course, I think I would probably go Sar at number one to Greg's point. I agree with him there. I'm kind of salivating over the thought of Bilal and Sar Denny defensive trio. We've been so bad on defense over the last decade. To have a trio in there, a young trio that I think you can say, these guys are going to be good defenders for the next 5, 6 years. We're going to be comfortable on the defensive end for a long time. I'm salivating over the thought of that. Of course, we don't know what Sar is going to develop into at this point. We don't know what Bilal will develop into fully at this point. I think we already know he's going to be an elite defender in this league for a little while at the very least. That's what I think. So if you can pair up those two defensively, of course they're going to have their limitations offensively, and I think you need to when the next good Wizards team comes about, need to figure that out. But I think when we're making this pick, we need to realize this pick probably isn't going to be our best player on our next good Wizards team. This guy's probably going to be our second or third best player on the next good Wizards team. So if you think of it from that perspective, just knowing how weak this draft class is perceived, I think you do need to swing at a elite potential defensive talent there in Sar if he's there. But beyond that, man, I really don't know where I'm going. I still have so much YouTube to look into here before the draft comes along,
Yeah,
because
I'm
you
there.
see a new top five from every single person who does mock drafts here over the last few weeks. I've seen different top fives than I think I've ever seen any year previously.
And to the point Greg made about Klingon, he's moved up after I guess a recent performance. I'm not big on college basketball, to be honest. So I believe it was in the tournament or whatever's going on. I know he had like an 8 block game, and I know people were saying that that he probably had more blocks than that, and they didn't even like count all the blocks. But he kind of reminds me of Walker Kessler, and I feel like if the Wizards had a pick that was like 14 and we were picking him, I feel much better about picking him, because I'm not a guy that likes to pick bigs unless the big has a bag like a Embiid type, or like obviously one of those guys can go in the top three. But I remember like the year that Ayton was the number one pick, I remember a lot of my friends were like, "Oh, Ayton, he's so big and skilled." And I was like, "Man, I would just pick Luka." Like, I remember I just felt like that because I just didn't want to pick a big man with the number one pick. And it's not even about being right. It's just I want someone that can kind of do something with the ball. But I do think that Sar kind of gives you I'm not saying it's a direct comparison, but he does kind of give you the Jaren Jackson Jr. like skill set a little bit. Which is kind of intriguing to me, where he could play both the four and the five, and he could play defense and potentially, handle the ball a little bit and do that type of thing. So he's definitely tantalizing. I think two prospects that pique my interest, and I'm not necessarily saying that these are guys I would pick with a second pick if that's what the Wizards get, or the first pick or something like that. But I like the Bouzelis kid, and I like Topic. I think both of them are really interesting to me. I think Bouzelis has more of what I think the traits I could see our front office liking in terms of his size, ability to do stuff with the ball, and his length, and at the forward position. And so I think that kind of having him with Denny and Bilal, I'm not saying that their skill sets are a seamless fit, because I'm not going to act like I'm some expert on Bouzelis, to be honest. But just from what I've seen, I just feel like he kind of fits the mold of what I could see our front office going for. Same with Sar. I definitely could see him kind of fitting that mold. But personally, I like Topic. I want someone that can kind of create for the team. And I don't I'm not taking I'm very happy with what I've seen from Jordan Poole, but he's not affecting what I'm doing on draft day because I have no idea whether he's going to be here or not down the road, and more likely he's probably not going to be here. So I wouldn't let that stop me from taking Topic. If I think Topic is the best player at two or the best player at four or wherever they're going to pick, given the draft is kind of all over the place and there's no clear-cut top five, I think you just take the guy that you think is the best. And so Topic has definitely piqued my interest. I like those big 6'5", 6'6" guards that can create. So those are kind of two guys I have my eye on. I definitely need to do much more research. But I almost wish the Wizards had another pick in the top 15, and they could do something to get like two of these guys where they could target kind of two things at once. And obviously, I'm sure every fan base wishes that about, their team. But I do like Klingon though. Let me ask you, Greg, what is it about him that's kind of drawn you to put him number two on your board? I'm not disagreeing, I'm just curious.
I mean, Walker Kessler is, it's funny you say that because that is the guy that I would compare him to. And look, Walker Kessler, bigs like him don't get drafted high, but they always produce. And like you said, if this was in the 9-10 range, you'd feel more comfortable. But I mean, I'm gonna evaluate what I think is best for the team. And if I think he's the second, if I think I take him at two, some people think, he shouldn't go until 18 because you shouldn't take a center that early or stuff like that. It's similar to like a running back in the NFL. I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs went 12 and everyone was like, what are the Lions doing? Why are they taking a running back that high? But the Lions were like, he was top five on our board. We think he's very good. And look, he was one of the best rookies in the league last year. I think just, and I saw this on JJ Redick's podcast with LeBron. They talked about having centers as a hub for the offense. Look at Jokic and Nurkic with the Suns and Sabonis. Like, you can get the ball to Klingon in the high post, run split screen action. He's a big dude. He can set screens. Like, you can run actions through him. And the big thing that I love is the defense. Like you mentioned, he's that defensive anchor that the Wizards haven't had in years. I mean, Gaff was pretty similar, but he wasn't at that level. And I just think he's a surefire, 10-year NBA veteran, will be a very solid piece on the Wizards teams. And in a draft where I honestly think it's easy to miss on talent and overthink things, he's a top three player in this draft right now for me, and that's why I think he should go pretty high.
Yeah, I feel like he has a skill set that I would have a hard time seeing being a miss, I guess. Like, I feel like he's like a high floor guy where if it even in like the worst case scenario, he's like in your 8-man or 9-man rotation, even if he's not a flashy player or a star. Like, I mean, even Walker Kessler, I don't think he's been as good in his second year as he was his rookie year in terms of like the trajectory he thought he'd be on. They for some reason haven't even like really been starting him this season and things of that nature. But I remember watching Jazz games last year, and he just had such an impact in terms of rim protection that it really was a positive. And he's not a player that has a high ceiling in terms of his offensive ability, but what he brings defensively is enough for him to be in a 9-man rotation, even as a rookie or a second year player. So I think that with Klingon, it's like you could see that going forward, even if he's not doesn't have the star potential as maybe Sar has. It doesn't appear like he does. You definitely can see that he has the foundation of a long time effective NBA player, which in this draft where it seems like things are really hit or miss might not be the worst thing in the world. Chase, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think he strikes me as a Tommy pick more so than a Dawkins pick. I think the safe pick is something Tommy has done in
Right.
his previous drafts, and people have, either loved or hated Tommy's draft strategy because of that. And I think even Johnny Davis was a guy who people deemed to be the safe pick, and obviously that didn't turn out being the case. But I think that was the thought process at the time. So I think he will be a good player for sure. Whether he has that superstar upside, I'm not so sure of. So to me, I think Dawkins and Winger are probably thinking upside swings with their draft pick. So this all obviously depends on where we're picking, who's on the board still. I certainly wouldn't be upset with that draft pick. I do think he's going to be a valuable player in this league for a long time, but To me, I think Dawkins is probably thinking bigger picture, thinking big swings. I think Bilal was a big swing, and so far, remains to be seen completely, but I think that's going to be a hit in my eyes. So I think they're going to keep swinging for the fences with high upside players on their board. So I'm really excited to see where we go with this in the draft. There's so many possibilities as we're seeing from mock drafts from everybody. No one really knows what's going to happen, and of course the draft lottery hasn't even happened yet, so that's going to determine a lot of things in on its own right. But so much parity here in mock draft world as the end of the regular season is approaching us here. So we got a lot of time until the draft, and I know my takes will change next week, the week after. There's a whole lot to be watched that even the front office probably hasn't seen.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Greg, do you have any other thoughts on the draft that you want to give us?
I mean, I like what Chase just said in terms of the upside. Obviously, Klingon is a guy that you know is going to be good, but like Chase said, he's not a Dawkins pick. He's a Shepherd pick. If you're in year three or year four and you're plugging holes, then Klingon's that guy. But someone like Rhys Shea or Bouzelis that might not be that good, but they have the size and the length. That's kind of what I would envision the front office to be looking for. So obviously, I think Klingon's great, but like Chase said, it's not a Wizards front office pick at the moment.
Yeah, and it also wouldn't surprise me if it was a pick that was more out of, I wouldn't even say, I was gonna say out of left field, but that's not the right terminology. But like a Cody Williams or a Ron Holland, like those are guys that, I mean, Ron Holland was the number one ranked prospect at a point, and obviously things evolve and change. But I've seen some boards that have him at two, and then, other places have him in the teens. So, and then Cody Williams was a guy before he had, I think, an ankle injury and some other, things that kind of held him back a little bit. I know he was on a minutes restriction. He was a guy that was in the top three on some places, and now he's kind of down toward that 10 range. So you just never know. I mean, they could really like Cody Williams, and he could be the guy that goes in the top three or something like that. So it's going to be interesting. I'm excited. I feel like the kind of the unknown of this draft almost makes it more exciting because you really just have no idea where things could go. Who's gonna pop in the pre-draft process and interview process and all that stuff. So it's gonna be really exciting. And I have faith in our front office to actually make the right pick. So I feel like that feeling is a good feeling to have,
100%. Haven't felt like that in a while.
All right, guys. Well, we've ran long. Greg, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. Greg, the host of the Wizards podcast, you write for Bullets Forever, a must follow on Twitter. Please tell people where they can find you if they don't already.
Yeah, so like Ryan so kindly said, at Greg Finberg on Twitter, it's Greg Finberg. Just post Wizard stuff. I'll be there every game. Don't know why I'm still watching, but I am. And that's where you can find me. Like you said, the Wizards podcast, Apple and Spotify, and all that good stuff. But not, don't just check out my stuff. Both Chase and Ryan do unbelievable stuff. Really authentic Wizards takes from guys that are really plugged in. So I really appreciate you guys having me on.
You're
Yeah,
officially
absolutely.
part of the Wizards group chat, Greg. So
Thank you.
We're all now, we got a content creator little group chat we've made, and we're all a part of it. Greg's been a the guy knows ball. We all know this. So thank you for coming on, Greg. You've been the man.
My pleasure, man.
All right, guys. Well, we'll get out of here and we'll catch you guys on the next one.